Just a few weeks ago, the FBI made 150 arrests in a human trafficking sting operation. Human trafficking is essentially is modern-day slavery. It's when one is forced or coerced with violence, deception, or threats to provide labor or commercial sex, and when they're prevented from leaving that situation. Human trafficking cases can occur anywhere, and they do happen here in our region. It can range from sex trafficking and domestic servitude to labor and organ harvesting. Washington has an organized coalition spanning trafficking victim support services, law enforcement jurisdictions, legislation, and our Department of Commerce and Health Care. We have guests in the studio today who will help shed light on the global and economic context of human trafficking, a sampling of types of human trafficking cases, and what people in our communities are doing to respond to human trafficking here in our region. Our guests in the studio today are Velma Valorio, former state legislator who was heavily involved in passing the first law against human trafficking in the U.S. Also, Emma Katagi, a victim advocate at API Chaya, an organization that provides services for victims of human trafficking and domestic violence. And Megan Bruno, Vice Squad Investigator with the Seattle Police Department. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
It's great to
for having us.
It's great to welcome you to KBCS. Velma, I'd like to start with you, if I could. So I understand that there is that domestic and international trafficking does take place. Can you tell me what kind of domestic and global conditions might force somebody into that sort of work, either as a perpetrator or a victim?
So as a victim, many of our victims of domestic trafficking are young women, underage girls who are possibly runaways. Mm-hmm. So they run away, they go to the mall, and then they get recruited by traffickers.
What would drive somebody? I mean, this seems like a desperate way to deal with the economic system. But shed some light on this for me.
On the runaways?
Yeah, I mean, also the perpetrators as well. What draws people to this kind of activity?
So what drives people really is the money. So for example, I'll give you an example.
Please.
You can buy drugs, you can sell drugs, but drug is sold only one time and it's used one time. You can sell a person, and then that person can get used over and over and over again. So there's no stopping, right? It could go on for years. Internationally, what happens also is that there is what we call this push and pull factor. Mm-hmm. When you have somebody who's desperate to survive but can't find a job in the country where they live, then they get recruited by people to go to other countries. So they go to all these different places where they think they are going to get a job, but when they get there, like when they get here to the United States, they get abused, and instead of working as a nurse or whatever, that they become traffic labor.
Understood. How did you get involved in this work?
It was all because of Emma and what happened in the Filipino-American community. I don't know if you remember, in 1995, there were three Filipino women that were murdered at the King County Courthouse. Mm-hmm. One of them was a mail order bride. Then 4 years later, there was another mail order bride, 20-year-old student at the University of Washington. So we studied, Emma kept telling me, Velma, this is more than just a domestic violence issue. There's something behind this. So we studied this whole issue regarding mail order bride with the University of Washington mm-hmm. Women's Center. And we came up with the conclusion that, in fact, when people become mail order brides, and I'm not saying all mail order brides end up this way, when they become mail order brides, they actually become part of what we call the victimization of brides, and they begin to become bride traffic. Or we call it bride trafficking.
I understand. In lots of cultures, these sorts of arranged relationships happen. So perhaps the victim isn't even aware of. That sort of thing is part of the culture, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps. Yes, some of it is mm-hmm. The issue of arranged marriages, and yes, that's part of the culture. But the other part of it, too, is it's not so much the culture, but it's really wanting to be able to have a better life.
Right, right. Aspiring to that, for sure. Mm-hmm. You were here in the Washington State Legislature for what, 10 years?
12 years.
Tell me about what you put in motion that protects trafficking victims legislatively.
Well, number one, we had to define it in the state. I remember when the murders happened, we had no term for it. People did not know what human trafficking was. This was in 2003 when I introduced that piece of legislation. So, one, we finally got a definition of what human trafficking is on a state level, right? And then the other is that now there was punishment. So the law provided that if somebody was caught as a trafficker, that there would be life imprisonment. And since then, 28 pieces or more of legislation has come through with the help of Senator Jeanie Cole Wells. And we provide different types of legislation that kind of concentrate on punishing the perpetrators, the buyers, as well as the traffickers. We've also tried to put forward legislation regarding Backpage.com and Craigslist, because they advertise, and a lot of the people that advertise for sex are younger women. And so, but that met a challenge because people said it was against the First Amendment rights. But we are going also to say the human trafficking issue is not just about sex, it's also about labor. So we wanted to put forward a piece of legislation regarding corporate responsibility. And we're hoping that, you know, that's going to come up this coming session.
We're speaking with Velma Valoria, former state legislator, about the human trafficking legislation that she introduced in Olympia. Emma Katagi, why don't you step in here and tell me about the kind of work you do as an advocate for the victims of human trafficking, and a little bit about the context. Velma explained for those of us who weren't here in 1995, what precipitated your involvement in this?
Well, as a founding mother of API Safety Center at that time, we've seen a lot of different kinds of victim of domestic violence. And I think a lot of time we don't know that at that time we don't have the name for human trafficking. So everybody comes to us, we just define it as a domestic violence victim. But through the process, when we talk to them, we find more other things that they are not just abused, but also they've been, you know, asked to do something that, you know, it's not, you know, ordinary. And so when I was working with the client or the victims, you know, we have one that's, you know, the first one that we have that actually we find out it's a victim of domestic and human trafficking is actually a young girl from American Samoa. She was brought here as, you know, a part of a family when she was very young. And then, you know, she lost her identity because they have to change her name. And she was not allowed to go outside until the time that she was 18. And that's the only time that she was able to get out of that situation. So we were trying to figure out that time what we can do to her. And I think that's just one of it. I think we have people, you know, like they came here as a nanny or a maid and, you know, was stuck in the house, you know, because they don't speak English. Their identity was taken away. So, and they were threatened that if you ever talk to someone or come out outside and talk to somebody, you know, you're going to get deported. So I think those are the things we have. When Velma was talking about mail order bride, we have one from Russia, you know. And again, the way they do it, they go, you know, through the mail, internet, they meet these people, and then they go and see them. That's what happened to Susanna Blackwell, you know. The guy went to the Philippines and basically, you know, lured him, you know, all this, you know, money and fancy and everything. So this Russian woman with two children, they came in here as a fiancé visa, by the time they get here from the airport, you know, they were sent to Colorado, and right there, it's the middle of the, you know, then the afternoon, they put, you know, the guy put them to work, and, you know, start being abusing them, and, you know, the kids also sexually assaulted by the guy, and he never married her. So she ended up, they ended up here in Seattle, and we've been working with them in the last 7 years. And it took a long time before we can actually, you know, some of the victims took a long time to really get some kind of the, you know, relief that they need, immigration relief. So while they're on that process, we provide them services, everything, basic, housing, food, you know, medical, translation, interpretation, legal advocacy, you know, phone card. Name it all.
Amazing. How so? Let's say that there is someone who is a victim of human trafficking. How do they find out about the services? So, and how do they take that first step? Is it something the local community knows? What's an example of someone who's reached out to you, and how does that work?
Usually, the victim, they cannot come forward.
Sure.
We have to find them. We have to figure out the way. And one of the things that we do, we work with the community. We try to educate community, service provider, you know, healthcare provider, name it all. We have a partnership with the law enforcement. So most of the time, we do presentation, training, you know, that we have to go out to the community. One of the things that we have to be mindful is sometimes the trafficker is within the community.
Right.
I mean, the victim that I serve, unfortunately, that trafficker is also coming from our community. So it's really hard because our community is so small. So we have to be very, you know, strategically how to do that. A lot of time it's either someone in the community that happened to learn something about human trafficking, that they see that there's something going on there, and they will call us, or they will call, you know, Megan, you know, the detective, and say, hey, you know, we think. And we always have told them, you know, whenever we go, we give them some information, just the basic information. If you see something unusual, something that is out of ordinary, you know, let us know, you know, and you can call us, and, you know, it's anonymous, you know, you don't have to tell us who you are, but just tell us, you know, what you see. And that's how it is.
We're talking about human trafficking, Emma Katagi, along with Velma Valoria. And that brings Megan Bruno into the conversation, who's from the Seattle Police Department. So what I'm hearing here is that there is this cooperation going on.
Absolutely. The Seattle Police Department co-chairs with the Washington Advisory Committee on Trafficking, and it is a large group of people that basically get together, law enforcement, service providers, healthcare professionals, people that are really about awareness about human trafficking, because we recognize that it is our community at this point that victims are going to when they're in need. Our victims have been exploited. They're vulnerable population, and they don't identify as victims of trafficking. They just know that they need help. And so that's how we reach out. Me from the Seattle Police Department, along with some of our amazing people from the Washington Anti-Trafficking Response Network, also known as WARN, we do a lot of trainings for the community members about what is human trafficking, and we talk about how it's ongoing exploitation. And we explain kind of who's here together holistically and to solve this over time. But we collaborate with a lot of law enforcement, federal agencies. The FBI is a part of the Child Exploitation Task Force. And we have detectives within my unit, the Vice High Risk Victims Unit, that are specifically geared to help all commercially sexually exploited youth. And then I'm on a task force with Homeland Security Investigations, and we do all four national investigations of labor trafficking, which can include sex. It's a form of forced labor. And then we work with King County and Snohomish County and Pierce County and all local agencies throughout the area. And we are investigating crimes throughout Western Washington and working also and collaborating with Eastern Washington agencies as well.
It's a remarkable thing, you know, for those of us who weren't completely aware of the depth of this issue, right? It's, I mean, you think sex, obviously, that may be one thing, but but the other sorts of examples of how this is being played out here, right here in our community, Megan. What's one of those? What's an example of something that that you work with, that you've worked with?
An example would be a case of domestic servitude. It could be your neighbor down the street, and it's a beautiful house or a nice house, just like any other house. But inside that house is someone that came over here on a legitimate visa, and they knew that they were going to be either caring for an elder parent or for a child or cleaning the house. But what they didn't know is that their passport would be taken from them, and that they would work 16-hour days, and that they would sleep on a cot in the basement bathroom or in the hot laundry room. And they were not allowed any breaks, not allowed to leave the home, taking the garbage out at night, closing the blinds, not allowed to answer the phone, things like that.
And in addition to what Megan was saying, is that they are also threatened if that they are not doing what they are told to do.
This is not a benevolent arrangement.
No, that if they did not do what they are told to do, they are threatened with families back home, like they threaten their families back home.
And these people who handle or who deal with human trafficking on that level what do you call them? I mean, you know, in a prostitution setup, they'd be a pimp. But what's the language for that?
Traffickers. Suspect.
Yeah.
In your case, Megan, definitely. We're talking about human trafficking here on Music and Ideas. Joining me here in the studio, Megan Bruno from the Seattle Police Department. I'm struck and impressed by the level of cooperation. I mean, you all knew each other before, or knew of each other before walking in the door, and certainly Velma and Emma have known each other. And that seems to me like a perfect way to address this issue. I mean, pretty much the only way to address this issue. One agency alone couldn't handle, you know, couldn't respond appropriately to this.
And it has to be viewed holistically, right? So we have to provide the necessary tools legislatively for people that provide services, and also for people that, you know, have to go and do the arrest or the investigation. And then at the same time, Emma is the one who says, this is how you identify some of these people that are, you know, that may be trafficked.
Emma, how does that work? What is there a profile? Is there something that a concerned citizen like myself might watch out for in this specific instance?
Well, I think just being aware of what's going on around you. I think when you're dealing with human trafficking, as you know, Megan said, we respond a lot of the labor trafficking, which is like a nanny, a domestic servitude, which is individual. And again, the trafficker could be also people from their own country. And sometimes when they go out there, they will introduce that person as their niece and, you know, their cousins or whatever. So you itself might not even, you know, like be aware of that. Oh, you know, she's just, you know, a family, you know, cousin or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, what we want is just for you, if you see unusual, you know, again, a lot of time they don't allow them to talk to anybody. So, or they might be somewhere, you know, or somebody is talking for them. A lot of times, you know, because they're limited non-English speaking, you know, if they're out in the community or out in there, they might, you know, they might just be sitting there and just look, you know, really sad or whatever. I think we also have one that, the other thing also, as we said, they hide, you know, one of our, you know, one of the person that we are working with. She was not allowed to go out. So whenever there's no people in their house, she's there and they have to close everything. And she was just sit there at the basement dark. And, you know, I think it's just the emotional trauma that's going on, because what's going to happen is if she said something, you know, the threat is that something's going to happen to her kids back home. And I think those are the things that a lot of time, We know this is real, even though it's just a threat, you know. And again, just be aware. I mean, we have a lot of information, you know, how to identify. It's really different. If you are in the restaurant, that could be another thing, you know, the buffet or whatever. Sometimes, you know, they have people that serving us. You can just, you know, have a little bit of like, how are you, or, you know, how you doing. And sometimes they don't want to say anything, or how much are you making? Are you okay? You know, are you, can you go out by yourself, or they allow you to do that? I mean, those are kind of, you know, just basic, simple question. But then at the same time, we don't want to rescue, we don't want you to rescue, because I think this is another thing is, if you're dealing with domestic violence, you know who is the abuser. But when you're dealing with victim of human trafficking, you really don't know who you're dealing with, because this is sort of an organized crime. And even for us, you know, we have to be very careful on, you know, what we're doing.
How would you suggest people proceed if they suspect something like this, Megan?
Well, naturally, coming from my perspective, if they see something that's actually happening, that's a 911 call. But if it's something that's suspicious in nature, that you can't really, it's more of a gut reaction, you can't pin a finger on it, then we always encourage people to call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. It's or also known as the Polaris Project. And that number, I don't know if you have it, it's the...
We have a website, which is polarisproject.org. And is that a great place to start?
It is. Those tips go directly to me, my sergeant, and my captain, the assistant U.S. attorney, Yiting Wu, who oversees the human trafficking investigations federally, as well as an FBI agent and Homeland Security investigations supervisor. So it goes to all the parties involved, and then we get those tips for all of Washington State. And then we make sure that the correct agency is dealing with it. And then we're patching in services because, like we were talking about earlier, that collaboration between case management and victim services with law enforcement is essential to this work. It's a unique approach where we do a very – what we call a victim-centered approach. So, yeah, that would be the best thing for community members if they think they see something suspicious in nature. Err on the side of caution. We'll look into it. And if it's nothing, then it's nothing. And if it's something, then hopefully we'll find it.
And Emma, you run an organization that's committed to helping these kind of folks, right?
Yes.
And what's the website and the way that folks can contact?
It's www.apichaya.org.
And Chaya is C-H-A-Y-A. So APICHAYA.org.
And then they can also do the WARN, W-A-R-N, Washington Anti-Trafficking Response Network. I think WARN.org. That's also another organization locally that we work with. And it's we have people in Eastern Washington and also in Spokane. So.
And we'll have some of this information up on our website at kbcs.fm. Inspiring work. Thanks to each of you for coming in this afternoon. Megan Bruno from the Seattle Police Department, thank you.
Thank you.
Velma Valoria, former state legislator, thank you for your work.
Thank you.
And Emma Katagi, thank you again for coming in today.
Thank you so much, and we hope that this will help a lot of the victims. Hopefully there's some that are listening, that there is a service and there's resources available for all of them, and we'll be happy to support them and help them any way we can.
Appreciate you coming in. Thanks for the great work.
Thank you.
It's KBCS Music and Ideas.